So we're on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. We started the sugya yesterday of Maskir Socher. That's what we want to continue today. So let's just first make sure everybody has the place. It's about two-thirds of the way down on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. It's a little bit above Tosis Divir Maskil Im, which is the last Tosis on the bottom left. And the first word in the line is Bo. More than that, I can't say. So assuming that we all have the place. Bo minemi Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. You may recall that it was Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak who had given us the insight and the answer to the question as to why we do the Bedikah at night. And he gave us what, according to some Rishonim, appears to be two different reasons. One reason is because of Bnei Adam Mitzuyim B'Vateyim at that hour, and the other answer was that Or Haner Yofel Abedik. The Gemara therefore went on to say that a Tzurim Rabbanon should not start his learning, even if he has a Kvius, he should not start his learning at that transitional moment between day and night, meaning the night going into the 14th, because if he gets involved in his learning, he may postpone the mitzvah of Bedikas Chometz. And yesterday we pointed out, based on Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak's previous statement, that there's a critical moment for Bedikas Chometz, an urgent moment. That transitional moment between day, in the case of the 13th, and night going into the 14th, that moment was pinpointed as the moment when people come back from work and they come into their houses, and that's when the Bedikas Chometz should be implemented. And we don't want to delay that. And once again, we don't have to say here that the Talmud Chacham is going to completely omit Bedikas Chometz, but we wanted to connect Bedikas Chometz to a specific moment in time. Now, when I say a specific moment in time, I don't mean on the clock. They didn't have clocks in those days. But what I mean to say by a specific moment in time, and it would be relative to the time, you know, to every year is a little bit different, but that moment when night begins, that's when we have to do the Bedikah. We don't want any delay. I was thinking last night that maybe there's another element over here. The Chachamim are not just instituting a mitzvah Bedikah, but they want to get rid of Chametz. So it could be that we don't want to delay getting rid of Chametz. Because once the Rabbanan said, this is the beginning of the process of getting rid of Chametz, they want that process to start immediately. So it's not like another mitzvah where they give you a certain range of time. You know, do the mitzvah between time T1 and time T2. And if you want to be Zoriz, you'll do it at earlier times. Reza Makdim La Mitzvah. If you don't want to be Zoriz, you have other things to take care of. You'll postpone the mitzvah. No. Not with regard to Bedikas Chametz. Because Chametz becomes enemy number one. And the Rabbanan said that enemy number one, we have to search and find it and locate it and then eventually destroy it. And we begin that search at a moment of time. If we leave the Chametz and postpone our Bedikah, then the Chametz is there when it shouldn't be there. At this point, we're involved in the process of finding the Chametz, cleaning out the house. It's not just the mitzvah saseh of Bedikah, it's also a lo saseh of not having Chametz in our possession. So we want to start that process of getting rid of Chametz at a certain point in time without delay. And in the case of a Talmud Chacham, if he sets up his kvius and he implements his kvius and he learns Torah at that time, we're afraid that he might postpone Bedikas Chametz. So once Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak is on board here for Bedikas Chametz, the Gemara asks him the following question. Hamaskir bayis lechavero biarbasar al mi livdok. So we have the maskir and the socher. Right? So we have the maskir who owns the house, and we have the socher who's renting the house. Who's obligated in Bedikah? Rashi says, if you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maskil, just 1 second, where's the Rashi I'm looking for, sorry. at the end of this very long Rashi, Dibra Maskil Chovas Hador, Rashi says, Torach ze al mi mutal. Do you see that, Rashi? It's if you counted the wide lines, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down. The last part of that big Rashi says, Torach ze al mi mutal. It's interesting to use the word Torah because we're talking about a mitzvah here. But this is a mitzvah that requires a lot of work. My Rebbe used to tell us that when he was a child, his father, when he got up to the ladder on the top floor of the house, which led to an attic, he used to ask his little son to go up and climb up to the attic, and he'd do the checking up to the attic. You know, it's a big tirch. Some people, you know, they put out 10 pieces of bread and that's it. They just look for the 10 pieces. That's not really bedika. That's not what it was meant to be. Bedika means a thorough bedika. I remember when we once, after 20 years of looking for chametz, we finally found a piece of chametz. I remember it was mamash a simcha gedola. We wanted to say shechiyanu, that we found a piece of chametz. Justified 25 years, you know, 20 years of bedika. I don't know what happened here. If you can fix it, fine. If not, you know, you did what you had to do, and that's it. But just all right. So the Gemara now analyzes the question, and the Gemara says the following: Ala maskir livdok. What's the tzad weighing in favor of obligating the maskir, the owner of the house, mishum dechamira di dehu, because the chametz is his. O Dilma, what's the tzad that weighs in to impose the Torah on the socher? Ala socher livdok de isura birshusei koi, because the chametz is in his possession. So again, who owns the chametz? The masker. Who finds the chametz in his possession? The socher. Okay, so the masker has, you know, there's a reason to obligate the maskir because he owns the chometz. There's a reason to obligate the socher because the chometz is in his possession. He's living in the house. Okay. Now, Rabosa, I'd like to start this sugya with the insights of the Toras Chaim. The Toras Chaim lived about 150 years ago. And he says the following, that at what point in time is this rental agreement active or binding? So he claims, the Toras Chaim, that according to Rashi, and honestly, I don't know where he found this in Rashi, maybe we'll find it, I didn't see it, but in any event, he claims that according to Rashi, and if it's not Rashi, it's the Ritva, so there are Rishonim who say this, if the rental agreement would go into effect 1 minute after the Shas Chiv Bedika, then the Maskir would be Chayiv to be Bodik, and it was never a Suffolk. In other words, the maskir, insofar as he owns the house, if he has not yet achieved the legal status of having rented it at the time that the chiyuv chomet and the chiyuv bedika sets in, let's call it time. We'll call it 7 p.m. is with shkiyas hachama, 7 p.m. on Leil Yudalid. He has not yet entered into a contractually binding schirus, then for sure he, the maskir, would have to do the bedika. Why? Because kvar chola olav chovas bedika, v'ein hu yochol asira me olav ulatil al socher. He's already obligated, and there's no way that he can transfer that obligation to someone else. Once obligated, always obligated. And therefore, Rashi says that when was this schirus validated? When did it become binding? He says they signed an agreement before Yudalit, which would take effect on Yudalit. Okay, that's called a kinyan liachar zman. In other words, I can enter into a maisa kinyan with you now, and the transaction will only be valid at some later point. And the transaction was meant to be valid on Yudalit. which begins with nightfall, and that's when the skirus, the rental agreement, is chal, is binding. Oh, and he says the following: the socher, the renter, entered into the house at that moment, meaning on the night of Yudalit, and he has no chametz there. He did not bring any of his chametz along. All the chametz that's in the house belongs to the maskir. So according to Toras Chaim, we understand that the entire suffix of the Gemara that was asked, the question that was presented of Nach, revolves around the following issue. As far as the Shas Chovaso is concerned, the moment of the Chiyuv Bedika at the 14th, well, now already the Schirus is valid, so that the maskir is out of the picture in a sense. But the only problem is that who owns the chametz that's in the house? Although the maskir never had the chiyuv bedika when at the moment of the inception of the 14th, but nevertheless, since his chametz is there, that's why he's obligated in bedika. On the other hand, we could say that since at the moment of Shas Chovaso the schirus was already binding, even though the socher did not bring in one morsel, one crumb of chametz into this house, nevertheless, he becomes chayev because all the chametz that's in this house is now accessible to him. It's called Bershuso. Bershuso means it's in his possession. So again, the suffix now revolves around the following issue. The maskir never had a chiyuv b'shas chovos because he already rented it. The socher, on the other hand, doesn't have a chiyuv with the inception of the shas chovos, even though the rental agreement was binding at that moment because it's not his chametz. So does the socher have a right to say to the maskir, look, you're giving me a house full of chametz. And your chametz is in the house. I don't have any chametz of mine in this house. You're obligated in bedinka because it's your chametz. Or does the maskir have a right to say to the socher, look, you rented the house as of the 14th, with the inception of the chiyuv bedika, the house was in your possession, and now the chametz is now in your house. You have a house with chametz in it. It doesn't matter whose chametz it is, you have to get rid of that chametz, and you have to therefore implement a bedika. That's the way the Toras Chaim interprets Rashi.
Wait, but what was his conclusion?
Well, we didn't get to the conclusion. Explaining the suffix of the Gemara. The Gemara is going to go back and forth with mezuzah until it finally comes to some conclusion.
He's not allowed. How can he possibly be allowed to do that?
Because who's he? The maskir or the socher?
The socher can't destroy the maskir's chometz. How can he do that?
He has to destroy. In other words, if you have your chometz in my rishus, that chometz is no longer yours because of what's called the isurei hanah. Again, that's going to be a major sugi that we'll get to, that something that's prohibited and you can't have any benefit from it is not considered yours, and I have to get rid of the chametz. Now, why do I have to get rid of the chametz? And the answer is because if I'm living with that chametz, that's a problem. Because of Shema Yovel Leochel, I might come to eat the chametz. On the other hand, it's your chametz initially, and the chiyuv bedika was established on someone who has chametz in his house. And therefore, you, the maskir, own the chametz, you have to get rid of it.
But we don't do that.
I didn't look in Shulchan Aruch yet. No, I mean, at the end of the day, maybe we'll look in Shulchan Aruch. I actually have the right volume here. Oh, no, I have the wrong volume.
We keep the whiskey. No, we don't destroy it.
Look, for the sake of whiskey, Michael, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to have to find a way. We don't want to destroy whiskey. We're going to have to, the whiskey has a different status, you know. We'll find a guy, we'll have to solve the problem of whiskey, But we're talking about chametz, a piece of bread, We don't have to sell a piece of bread. Even though I go through the motions and I sell bread, but I don't really sell bread. I sell whiskey, Okay. So again, Rabosai, what's crystal clear according to the Toras Chaim? This is Rabosai, this is the main point I want you to take with you here. The Taurus Chaim assumes in Rashi, listen carefully, and if you could write this down, that if the Schirus would have been binding before Yudalid, then clearly, without a shadow of a doubt, who would be Chayv and Bedika? The Maskir. You cannot shake off the Chayv Bedika once you picked it up. The issue here is who picks up the Chayv Bedika when the rental agreement starts on Yudalid, because the Maskir is holding, you know, he's the owner of the Chametz. But if the agreement would be binding 1 hour into the nighttime of Yudalid, you know, if let's say Yudalid starts at 7 and they signed a contract where the agreement would be at 8, then according to Rashi, says the Taurus Chaim, clearly the Maskir would be Chayv and Bedika. That was never an issue at all. But we're talking about a case where they signed an agreement an hour before Yudalid, such that the agreement would take place on Yudalid, right? Every rental agreement has to have a date on it. The date of this agreement was the rental is on Yudalid. That means with the inception of Yudalid, the Socher has already acquired his rental ownership over the apartment. And therefore, insofar as the Chametz is Birshusei, it's in his possession, he would have to do Bedika or no. He has the right to turn to the Maskir and say to the Maskir, you know what, I don't want this house. This is not the house that I bargained for. You know, I'm paying you rental. I want a house that's free of chametz, because I don't want the tircha, the hassle of doing bedikas chametz. It's your chametz. You get rid of the chametz. And then we turn to Tosus. It's a whole different story. Tosus, Dibur HaMaskil al HaMaskir Livdok. Ein lefarish, you cannot interpret that hatam, that the logical, compelling reason why the maskir has to check this house is kema de shalohu, because it's his chametz. The ein adam yochel levatel elahu, that no one else could get rid of his chametz except for him, and therefore he's chayv livdok. Diem kain, if that be the case, Amay nokat maskir lechavero biyudalid, afilu biyud gimel yischayev hamaskir. Let's say the rental agreement took place on the 13th, and the maskir, excuse me, let's start with the socher. The socher could testify that when he entered into this apartment on the 13th, he made a decision that he's not bringing any chametz in. That would make sense, would it not, Rabosai? I mean, you don't want to bring chametz in a day before Pesach. So he signed a binding agreement on the 13th. It's binding on the 13th. And the socher has no chametz here. So who has chametz here? The maskir. No, if that be the case, mehai taima livdok. Then we still have a logical reason why the maskir should be chayav in bedika, even if the schiris took place on Yud Gimel, and the maskir has a right to say to the socher, look, you know, when Zman Shas Bedika comes around, you have full rental rights over the apartment. Well, the socher should still have a right to turn to the maskir and say, wait a minute, it's your no good chametz that's in the house. So again, if we take this Gemara literally the way Rashi did, and the reason why the maskir should be obligated in Bedika is because it's his chametz, then that should apply even on Yud Gimel. Even if the rental agreement was as early as the 13th of Nisan, the maskir should still be, according to this tzad in the Gemara. Again, keep in mind, Don, we haven't come to any conclusion, but there's one 50% chance weighs in that the maskir, he owns the chametz. So if he owns the chametz, then even on Yud Gimel, he has no right to say, hey, you rented it a day before Bedika, and therefore you're in charge here when the time of Bedika comes out. No! The socher should still have a right to turn to the maskir and say, it's your chametz. So we have to come up now with a whole new pshat in the Gemara, says Tosus, because the Gemara only asks this question if the rental agreement is binding on the 14th. The Gemara never asks the question, what if the rental agreement would be binding on the 13th? And yet the same question should apply, because the maskir owns the chametz and the socher claims he has no chametz in the house. But yet the socher is living with the chametz. If he's living with the chametz, maybe that's enough of a reason to obligate him bedika. So Tosus now has to find a way to justify that the Gemara's suffix only applies if the agreement, the Schirus agreement, is binding on Yudalid. If they went into an agreement on Yudalid, is Lakach Mefarish Ri. So the Ri is one of the Baliat Tosfos, you know, the classical, one of the classics in Tosfos. And he interprets the Gemara a little bit differently. He says, the Chamira di Dehu, the Chalalov Chiyuv Bedika, Shah Achas, Kodem Sheskira. Rabosa, I'm going to translate these words, and you're going to tell me at what point in time, again, keep in mind that the Chiyuv Bedika is at 7 p.m. in our example. So tell me when the rental agreement is binding. I'm going to translate the words of the Ri. The Ri says, Chamira di Dehu, it's his chametz. It means that he was obligated in Bedika 1 hour before the rental. When did the rental take place then? At 8 p.m. In other words, the Ri is interpreting the sugya that the reason why the maskir is chayav in Bedika, according to one side of the Gemara, not the way Rashi interprets it, because it's his no good chametz, if you pardon the expression, but rather because at the moment of Shas Chiyuvo, the house was in the full possession of the maskir, because when did the schiris take place? 1 hour later. Nu Rabosai, if according to the Ri, the schiris took place 1 hour later, then if the Gemara thinks that the Socher might be Chayim and Bedika because he's living in the house, what premise is Tosis operating with? Nobody has it. Okay, I'll start again. According to Rashi, listen carefully. According to Rashi, the agreement was signed and sealed and becomes binding at the moment of the 14th. Mm-hmm. Says the Toras Chaim, why does Rashi insist that that took place? Because if the agreement took place beyond that moment, later than that moment, then a Chiyuv Bedika is non-transferable. Once the Chiyuv Bedika is chal on the maskir, because at that moment in time, he had full possession of the house. It was his chametz, and he had possession of the chametz. Everything is on the maskir. There was no agreement entered into at that moment in time. The agreement is going to be entered into now later. Rashi would hold that in that case, it was clear, it was certain, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the maskir would be chayv b'dika. Chiyuv b'dika is non-transferable. Do you ever go on a bus and they give you a transfer, right? And they say you could use it on another bus, but it says non-transfer. You can't give it away. You can't sell it on the open market, right?
I think my confusion is the timing. In other words, what point of the day is it considered night? What time is
7 o'clock? Again, just keep in mind 7 o'clock.
Okay.
We're just giving
you. You're just putting a number there.
A number there. Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, again, as I insisted over and over again, there is no time. They didn't have clocks, so you can't say 7 o'clock, right? Okay. But.
So 7 o'clock is starting your dollar.
Correct.
Okay.
Good.
But he enters 1 hour before or 1 hour after?
No, he signs an agreement that this house, according to Rashi, this house is now rented to you. You're the socher as of Yudal,
which is 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Okay.
Says the Toras Chaim, if at 7 o'clock there was no binding agreement yet, because the agreement would be chal an hour later, then Rashi would insist that there was never a suffix.
Why an hour later?
Again, if they signed an agreement that this house will be yours as a renter, you're the socher, at 8 p.m., then Rashi says clearly, beyond the shadow of a doubt, the maskir would be chayiv and bedika. Why? Because a chiyuv bedika is non-transferable. I can't say that at 7 o'clock I'm not going to do the bedika. I'm going to transfer that chiyuv bedika to you as a socher, because an hour later you're going to be the socher and you're living with the chametz. No, I can't say that.
I'm sorry. You just said that the contract says it starts on your dollar, which is 7 o'clock. So where's the 8 o'clock coming?
Right. So why does Rashi insist that the contract has to be at 7 o'clock? Says the Toras Chaim. Because Rashi would hold that if the agreement would be chal, would go into activity at 8 o'clock, then there would be no suffix in Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's mind. Who would be chayiv and bedika? The maskir. Why? Because at the moment, at 7 o'clock, the rental agreement hasn't gone into effect.
Okay.
No.
You don't have it?
No.
Because does anybody else have it?
It's happening exactly at 7 o'clock. So we don't know who's responsible. The person, the mosque or the sofa, because it's happening right
at that time. Okay. So, so why put it an hour later?
No, because if it were an hour later, we know for sure it would be a mosque. But the problem, the suffix is, it's happening exactly at 7 o'clock. So we don't know who's responsible. Is it the mosque or is it the sofer? That's what Rashi has to be saying is exactly 7 o'clock. Otherwise, Rashi would say if it's 8 o'clock, of course it's the mosque. So there's no what would be the kashya in the mosque?
And if it's at 6 o'clock, then what?
And if it's at 6 o'clock,
then
it's the sofer.
It is right.
Right, because then the schirus was chal before the Shas Chiyuvah. So already the Shas Chiyuvah comes and it... But if... Okay. So the main point is, Michael, that if the Schirus is going to be chal at 8 o'clock, according to Rashi, it would be absolutely clear that couldn't be the scenario of the Gemara, because that would be crystal clear beyond the shadow of death that the mosque would be chayv and b'diko. Says the Torah Chaim, because Rashi operates with the following principle. If you could write this down, I'd be very happy. That a chiyuv bedika is non-transferable. I can't say this more than 50 times and I wouldn't be saying it enough. Rashi shita is that a chiyuv bedika, once it sets in, if I can identify at the moment of Shas Chovasa the person who's obligated bedika, there's no way under the heavens that you can shirk or remove that chiyuv. It's just non-transferable. You can't get someone else to stand in your shoes and take over the chiyuv. Clear.
That's clear.
Counsel in the Re, and the Re in Tosis says that the entire tzad, the entire logic that weighed in on one half of the scale to be Machai of the Maskir, was because at 7 o'clock the Maskir was in possession of the house, and the rental agreement only went into effect at 8 p.m., an hour after the Shas Chovasa. So what premise did the Re reject?
Non-transferability.
The Re holds that the Chiyuv B'dika is transferable. I can transfer the Chiyuv B'dika even after it was Chal. And the reason I can do so is because when I rent out the house to you, I'm renting the house to you with Chametz in it, and I'm imposing upon you, within the context of this rental agreement, the Chiyuv B'dika. Why? Because you're going to live in this house, you're there over Pesach, you're going to suffer the consequences of having chametz in your possession. You might come to eat the chametz, etc., etc., etc. Therefore, you now become the proud owner of that ticket that says on it, "Yo chayev in bedika." So there's a fundamental machlokas here between Rashi and Tosa on the following point. Whereas Rashi understood that kevet shen chayev b'shaita, once you are chayev, it's non-transferable. The Re in Tosa disagrees, and he says that's exactly what the Gemara is vacillating about. Back and forth. Is there a possibility of the maskir transferring the chiyuv, even though he picked it up at the Shas Chovasa at 7 p.m.? Clearly he was chayev. Now, through the binding schirus, an hour later, can he transfer the chiyuv over to the soch?
The maskir bottles the chometz before he sells.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to get to that. Stu's pointing out that there would seem to be a simple solution to this whole issue here. Again, I'm not sure about Tosis. Let's go back to Rashi for a moment. I think your question is valid in Rashi's frame of reference. If we take the Gemara literally, that the reason why the maskir is chayev b'dika is because he owns the chametz, well, that's a problem that could be solved very easily with a snap of the fingers. Let the maskir just be mevatel his chametz, and bittel takes your possession and nullifies your possession. So now the maskir should be able to say to the socher, there's no reason under the heavens why I should be chayev b'dika.
Rashi says the reason. Rashi says it's tircha. Who's going to, if I'm renting, you're going to make me go through this whole thing?
Rashi's only saying tircha because you own the chametz. Rashi's not, he's not scratching out two words in the Gemara. The Gemara says explicitly that the reason why the tircha should be imposed upon the maskir, according to one side, 50% of the sofer, is because chamir didei. And Rashi takes chamir didei literally, that he owns the chametz. Well, why doesn't he just simply he exercises rights to disown his chometz by being mevatel the chometz. Again, Rav Bosa, I don't want to get off on the tangent. If you're not going to let me present this sugya stage, it's brilliant that Dr. Rubin came up with this kasha, but it's going to derail us. It's a beautiful kasha, and I promise you that the Rishonim were aware of this kasha. And it's a very, very profound question here. Where does bittul fit into this whole sugya if you take chamira d'day literally? Again, Tosfos is not so problematic because Tosfos actually crosses out the words chamira d'day. In Tosfos' Gemara, don't take me literally here, it doesn't say chamira d'day. It says chiyuva d'day. Because according to the Ri and Tosfos, when did the contractual agreement become binding?
8 o'clock.
No, if it said 8 o'clock, then chamira d'day. Chamira d'day means that the headache of this chametz belongs to you, Mr. Maskir, because at 7 o'clock there was no binding rental agreement, and the agreement is possibly transferable or possibly not transferable, and the Gemara is vacillating about that point. But you don't have to introduce Bintel over here because he wasn't Mevatel's Chometz yet, and if he wasn't Mevatel's Chometz yet, then at the moment of 7 o'clock, if he wasn't Mevatel's Chometz, then it's already a Shascho Vaso, he became obligated, and that's enough for the Socher to say to the Maski, you were obligated in the initial period of the thing. But according to Rashi, that it really depends on who owns the Chometz, why can't the Maski go ahead and be Mevatel Chometz? I promise you we'll get to that, but there's so many dimensions to this Sugya that we have to sort it all out, as the Brits say, right? Or is that a South African phrase? I get confused here in the Amic Learning Center. Okay. All right. Now, let's ask the following question. There's something... Okay, I'm afraid to introduce new terminology here because... what do I do now? Okay. All right. I'm going to try it. Don, I know you're going to kill me. I don't know. But I hope everyone else at least will be okay with this. If you've learned a little bit about Metziah, you know there's something called a mafkid and a nifkad. Okay, I'll write it on the board. I don't know if this will help you, Don. Okay, a mafkid. Okay, a mafkid. Right, there's a whole chapter about Metziah called Hamafkid, and then there's something called a nifkad. Okay, now in order to understand the difference between mafkid and nifkad, I really have to go back to basics, okay? Okay, so there's something called shallow, and this, right, shallow, and there's something called birshuso. Okay, so watch what happens over here. Don, can you pay attention to me? I need your eyes for eye contact here. If I own something, that's called shallow, and then I give it to you, and I say to you, can I use your property just to leave it there? Again, now there are four different categories here about what I say to you. Do I say to you, accept upon yourself responsibility to watch it, and then you become a custodian, that's called a shomer, and then it's a shomer chinam.
I'm actually familiar with it.
You're familiar with it. Yeah. So now, this guy, we'll call him Reuven, okay? He's the mafkid. Meaning it's his and he owns it. He gives it over to the possession of Shimon, okay? And now it's in the reshus of Shimon. It's in the domain of Shimon. Shimon is called the Nifkat.
Okay.
Okay, good. If we got back by that, then we're good. What's the deal on Chometz with regard to a Mafkid and a Nifkat? Who violates if, let's assume nobody did bedika, nobody did beer, nobody did bittul, nothing. Nothing was done. Who violates bal yirah, bal yimotze, in a case of a mafkid and a nifkad? In other words, Reuven passes on, what's the word I want to use?
Transfers.
Transfers, but transfers not in the sense of ownership, though. I mean, just physically transfers, right? He transfers his chometz into the possession of Shimon.
He bequeaths?
He gives it.
He gives it to him. Okay, there's another word I'm looking for that's a little more sophisticated. It doesn't matter. Anyway,
he deposits.
This is chometz. Deposits. Excellent. So this is my chametz, and I deposit it in your possession. I'm called the mafkid, you're called the nifkad. Who violates bal yirah bal yimatzeh? We're going to see three possibilities. Who violates the iser of owning chametz, of possessing chametz? In other words, one Jew has ownership, that's called shelo, but he doesn't have bershuso. It's not in his possession. The other Jew has possession over the chametz in the sense that it's physically located in his dalet avos, in his four cubits, but he doesn't have shelo. So there are a number of possibilities here, and this is going to be a major sugya in the Gemara later on Daf Vav. Okay, so we're straddling now between Daf Dalid in Maskir and Socher and Daf Vav in Mafkid and Nifkad. We have one leg on Daf Dalid and another leg on Daf Vav. But there's no choice. I'll tell you why there's no choice. We have to know about this sugya on Daf Vav in order to appreciate the sugya here on Daf Dalid. One possibility is to say the following. That, and this is the sheet if you want to make a note of it, of Rabbeinu Yonah, that the mafkid is in violation of bal yirah bal yimatzeh. In other words, the key of keys to bal yirah bal yimatzeh, to this violation, is what?
Shalom.
That's the sheet of Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah goes so far with his sheet that he says the following, listen carefully, even if Shimon, right, the Nifkad, would take responsibility for that chametz, he, Shimon, is not in violation of bal yimatzeh, but Reuven the Mafkid continues to be culpable for bal yirah bal yimatzeh. That's how far Rabbeinu Yonah goes. Okay. That's the Shita Rabbeinu Yonah. Now we have the sheet of the Gaonim. The Gaonim came before Rabbeinu Yonah. Their sheeta is that it all depends on what's called Kavol Sachrais, meaning, don't get nervous, it means it all depends upon whether the Nifkad took upon himself responsibility. And the entire Perek of Perek HaMafkid is about the responsibility, the various possible levels of responsibility that the Nifkad took upon himself. So if the Nifkad takes upon himself responsibility, then according to the Gaonim, he, the Nifkad, becomes chayev for bal yirah bal yimatzeh. I'll read it to you. Kol sha Nifkad lo mekabel achrayis al chometz harei b'shusa shel mafkid, and the mafkid is chayev for bal yirah bal yimatzeh, and the mafkid is chayev for bal yirah bal yimatzeh because shelo, it's his. And no one else is responsible for his chametz. And therefore he remains in the driver's seat, unfortunately, as far as the violation and liability for violation of bal yirah bal yimatzeh. But if the Nifkad, that Shimon, takes upon himself responsibility, and again there's going to be a whole sub-machlokas here about what level of responsibility. Let's say he took responsibility for what's called Gneva Vaveda, and the responsibility for Gneva Aved is what's called a Shomer Sochar, which usually means he's paid for it, but he accepted upon himself that level of responsibility. Then at that point, Kasher Anifkad Mekabal Atzmo Achrayus Mi Gneva Aved, Nasa HaChometz Kishayach LaNifkad VeHu Chayav HaMafkid Potter. So again, let's go over this. We start with Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that the mafkid always remains chayev in bal yirah bal yimatzeh, and even if the nifkad accepted upon himself responsibility. That's the sheet of Rabbeinu Yonah. The Gaonim are of the opinion that it all depends upon whether the nifkad took responsibility. If the nifkad says, you can put down your chametz here in my possession, in my living room, I don't care where, find a closet for it, but I'm not responsible for your chametz, then the mafkid continues to be the one who's chayv for bal yirah bal yimatzeh. But if the nifkad, according to the Gaonim, accepts upon himself responsibility for the chametz, then the nifkad becomes the owner, so to speak, in inverted commas, right? The owner of the chametz as far as bal yirah bal yimatzeh is concerned, because he's responsible for the chametz. This is all on Daf Vav Amud Aleph. Okay. Now, let's plug this all in on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara wants to know who's Chayev in Bedikah. And Rashi seems to assume that it all depends upon who's going to violate Bayura Bayimotze, because if you remember, as we emphasized over and over again, Rashi at the beginning of Masechta Pesachim identifies Bedikah as a prevention of Bayura Bayimotze. So now we have to ask the following question. Who's in violation of Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh? On the one hand, the Maskir says, although I own the Chametz, but it's not my Rishus. The Socher, for his part, says, well, I'm not going to violate Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh because it's not my Chametz. Are you with me so far? So again, the Maskir's claim is, I'm exempt from Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh because I don't have access to the Chametz. It's not my possession. I deposited it. In effect, I deposited in the possession of the Sulkim because he's renting the apartment. The Sulkim, from his part, says that I'm not in violation of Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh because it's not my chametz. Oh, so what was the issue over here? In other words, everyone is disclaiming the chametz because nobody wants the Torah Chabedika. Say each one says he doesn't want the Torah Chabedika. Okay. So according to Rishonim, who violates Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh? So let's go over this. Both Rabbeinu Yonah and the Gaonim would agree that if the Nifkad is not responsible for the Chametz, he never accepted responsibility, then who's in violation of Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh?
The Mafkid.
Good. It's safe to assume, and that's why the Gemara says Chavira Didei, and that's the reason why the Maskir should be Chayav B'dikah, that the Socher is not interested in accepting responsibility. Why would the Socher want responsibility for the Maskir's Chametz? So if you grant the following premise that the Socher says to the Maskir, look, you have Chametz in this house, I don't want to know of it. You know, you want to come and take it, come and take it. I'm not responsible in any shape or form for your Chametz. So in that case, then both the Gaonim and Rabbeinu Yonah would agree that the chametz and the violation of Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh is all in the court of the maskir. Okay, so far so good. But now we get to another sheet of Rishon. This is Rabbeinu David. He was a Talmud of the Ramban. This is the Maram Chalva. And they say the following, that neither the Maskir nor the Socher violates Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh. Here's a case of Chametz that literally fell between the cracks. The Maskir doesn't violate Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh because the Chametz is not his Rishus. The Socher doesn't violate Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh because the Chametz is not his. And now we have two conditions that have to be met. You have to check off two boxes in order to generate a chiyuv of Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh. It's got to be both shelo and bershuso. So if you go with that shita, then in effect no one violates Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh. And if that be the case, then we're really stuck with the following issue. Why does Gemara think right? Why does Gemara think that the Maskir should be chayev for Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh and therefore chayev in Bedikah? In other words, if the Maskir, according to the Maram Chalva, doesn't violate Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh because it's not Bershuso, even though it's Shalo, and we need two conditions in order to generate Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh, then what was the Havamina? Why should the Maskir be culpable, be liable for Bedikah under the law of Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh? He doesn't violate Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh. Which is really an interesting situation because maybe no one should be chayav in Bedikah because no one violates Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh. So what's going on in this sugya? So Bishleim, if we go with the sheet of Rabbeinu Yonah, or we go with the sheet of the Gaonim, and we assume that the Socher was not Mekabel Achrayus, then who violates Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh? The Maskir, the Mafkir. Then we can see that the Gemara has a real tzad to say that the Maskir, so far as he violates Bal Yeroi Bal Yemotzeh, he should be chayav in Bedikah. But if we go with the sheet of the Ram Chalva, and Rabbeinu David, the Talmud and Ramban, they assume that neither the mafkid nor the sulker is chayiv in bedika. So what was the tzad to say that the maskir should be chayiv in bedika? I'm asking the following question. The Gemara says chametz didehu, correct? That the tzad to say that the maskir is chayiv in bedika is because it's his chametz. And if we assume his ownership of the chametz generates ba'yiro ba'yimotzei, then he should be chayv in bedikin, so far as bedikin is a protection from ba'yiro ba'yimotzei. We'll get to the sulker in a minute, but let's not confuse the sulker with the maskir. Oh, so again, to say that the maskir is chayv in bedikin because he owns the chametz, and ipso facto he's over ba'yiro ba'yimotzei, makes sense according to the Rabbeinu Yonah. And even according to the Gaon, if we assume that the Sulker did not accept a Chrayus, then all of Al Yerov Batsi is on. So that's what Gemara means by saying Chamir Di Dehu. He, the Masker, owns the Chametz. He, the Masker, is liable for Al Yerov Batsi. But if I go with the Rabbeinu Yonah, with the Imam Chalva and Rabbeinu David, that neither of them are over by Rav Rimotze. It fell through the cracks because the Maskir has a right to say it's not in my possession, and there are two conditions that have to be met in order to violate by Rav Rimotze, and the second condition was not met as far as the Maskir is concerned because he doesn't have the chametz for shu. So what was the tzad to say in the Gemara that maybe the Maskir should be chayv in bedika? So what is the re and Tosus introduce here, Rav Osai? What issue?
Transferability.
That's where the Re is forced to reinterpret this sugya. Because the Re cannot understand how the Gemara can be taken literally, Chamir Didei, that it's his chametz. So what if it's his chametz? He's not in violation of Al Yerov Ba'yimotzei. And the reason for that is because he rented out his house and he doesn't have it Bershuso. If he doesn't have it Bershuso, then the second condition in Valyura Bayamotse has not been met. And if the second condition has not been met, then he doesn't violate Valyura Bayamotse. So what do you tell me, Chamir Didehu? Says the Re, you misunderstood. The Gemara doesn't mean Chamir Didehu. The Gemara means that it was his chametz and it was in his Rishus at the inception of the Chiyuv Bedika, meaning at what time?
At seven,
because according to the Re, when did the Schirus become binding? Only at what? At 8 p.m. Is Memel, if it's non-transferable, that's why he should be Chayv. That's what Chamir Didei is. Oh, Dilma says the Gemara, Nein. He can transfer it over. He can say, look, this is so fair. You're the one who has to live and tolerate this chametz. You might come to eat the chametz, assuming that there might be chametz somewhere. You go ahead and do the bedikah, and I can transfer the chiyuv bedikah together with the, you know, you never know when you sign a rental agreement, what comes along with the rental agreement. You know what I mean? You know, if you find various animals, you know, that infest the apartment, you get an extra bonus in the agreement. You know, you got to get rid of the natural elements, you know. And then there's an issue. Let's say you find retivut, how do you say it in English? Moisture. What's it called?
Mold
or wetness or this. So who's responsible for that? You never know when you sign in a rental agreement. It's like signing away your life, you know. So in this case, the Maskir says to Sulker, you signed a rental agreement, you're living with the Chametz, you now inherited a Chiyuv Bedika, and I can transfer that to you according to the Re. So that's very fascinating. Now, Rabbeinu Peretz was one of the Balei HaTosfos who wrote his own Tosfos in, and he claims that the reason why the maskir could certainly exempt himself from bedika is because, as Stuart said before, he can do bittul. What are you going to point a finger at me and say, well, it's my chametz? I have no problem. I'm going to make bittul. I have a right to make bittul. In fact, I'm obligated to do bittul. And therefore, it's not my chametz. So once again, we're going to have to assume, says Rabbeinu Peretz, that he had the possession of the house before he rented it out at 8 o'clock at the time of the Chiyuv Bedikah at 7. And he didn't make a bittul at that time. Now, what would be, according to Rabbeinu Peretz, if the maskir was a smart dude, and he wanted to certainly avoid this tircha of having to do bedikah, he would make bittul before 8 o'clock when the rental agreement goes into effect. And therefore, he never became chayav. I should say it a little better. he would have to be mavatel chometz at what point?
Before seven.
But isn't that an ethical dilemma because he's like throwing it on?
Oh, so that's going to be the second half of the sugya on daf chesam and aleph. What about the ethics of this whole business? And that's called mekach toz. Does the soch have a right to say I didn't rent an apartment with a cat in it? I can't deal with your cats or your other bugs. I don't want to mention their names because I get nervous when I even mention their names, and therefore I'm out of this agreement. I didn't rent an apartment with a chiyuv b'dika. Okay, so that's going to be the other element in this equation, which we didn't even get up to. That's way, way down the line. Oh, so now we have the toughest part of the sugya, Toshma. And the Gemara says, you want to know who's chayv in this b'dika? The answer is, who's chayv to put up a mezuzah? Says the Gemara, Toshma. Hamaskir ba'is l'chavero ala socher lasos lo mezuzah. What in the world is going on here? You're talking about mezuzah. And the question is, who's chayav mezuzah? Is the owner of the house or is the one who's living in the house the renter? That's an excellent question. But what does that have to do with bedikas chametz? Bedikas chametz depends upon who owns the chametz, who's going to live with the chametz, or alternatively, is bedika transferable or non-transferable? What does the Gemara want here from mezuzah? So here I want to share with you the Pnei Yoshua, if I can just find it. The Pnei Yoshua says the following. He says, Hasha'ela, the Gemara's question of Michayev Livdok, Tluya Besibas Chiyuv Bedika. Is it because of Bal Yeroba Yimotze, and therefore the Maskir is Chayev and Bal Yeroba Yimotze? This is according to everyone except for Rabbi David and the Ram Chalva. O Shema. Maybe the reason for B'dika is Shemi Yovel Yochlo, because we're afraid he might come to eat it, and then the Socher should be Chayav B'dika. Ve'viya Gemara Sadin Mezuzah. What's got to do with Mezuzah? You know, Mezuzah is not about ownership, about Shemi Yovel Yochlo, that he might eat it. Oh. Says the Pnei Yoshua, that there's such a thing as transferring a chiyuv mitzvah. That's what the Gemara wants to get from mezuzah. That before the schirus was binding, who clearly was obligated in putting up the mezuzah? The maskir. Is heviya Gemara sadin shel mezuzah kdei litchos satzad she'im achiyuv hu mishum she'hamaskir who bailim alachomis hu over bal yorobayim motzei. And therefore, he cannot transfer that chiyuv over to the socher. The mezuzah, mi mezuzah yesh lo chiyach, shafal gav shabaisu shal amaskir, mi kol akom, ala socher lasos mezuzah. In other words, according to Pnei Yoshua, if I say it in a certain inflection, he's saying we have a case of mezuzah. The maskir clearly was chayav in mezuzah. And now we take a look at the Braisa, and the Braisa says the following. The Braisa says, Hamaskir Bais L'chaver La Socher Lasos Mezuzah. Basically, the Maskir is shirking his responsibility by virtue of the rental agreement. Notice the Maskir was clearly obligated in Mezuzah, and now the Socher becomes obligated in Mezuzah. Now, wait a second, that fits very well according to Tosus, because again, according to Tosus, the whole issue was transferability or not. So then, we saw in mezuzah transferability. That's very nice. But according to Rashi, we're not interested in transferability. Rashi never entertained even the havami that you could transfer a chiyuv from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock once you were chayv at 7. But the whole issue was ownership over the chametz versus accessibility to the chametz. So what was the tzushta, what was the equation to mezuzah? Huh. says the Pnei Yoshua that there are two elements in the Chiyuv Mezuzah. One is ownership over the house, and the other is living in the house. And each one, in and of itself, would give you ample reason to be obligated in Mezuzah. No, but now we have a tug of war, because the maskir has ample reason to be chayv in mezuzah because he owns the house. The socher, on the other hand, insofar as he lives in the house, he needs a mezuzah. So what do you do in the case, in this case? So the Pnei Yoshua says, read Rashi. What's in Rashi that we missed? Rashi says, Dibra maskil lasos lo mezuzah, on the third of the wide lines, that the socher has to do, has to set up the mezuzah. Alma, midi de mitzvah, alei ramya. What does Rashi mean? Let's translate Rashi literally. That anything of mitzvah is imposed upon him. Who's him? Again, who has to put up the mezuzah? Now read it again, Don. It says, Toshma, where is it? Hamaskir, I'm sorry, I keep losing the place here. Here, Toshma. It's right parallel to Tosus Dir Masel Im. Hamaskir Vaisachaver al Asocher Lasos Lo Mezuzah. Says the Pnei Yoshua, that's what Rashi wants to say when he says, Midi de mitzvah Ramli Alei, when you have a mitzvah that could be equally obligatory upon both, either the Maskir or the Socher, either one of them are really great candidates. You know, each one has a reason why he should be involved in the mitzvah. Who finally has to do the mitzvah? Is the Torah, does the Halacha say, we're going to declare the Maskir obligated because, you know, he's first on line, so to speak, or do we say the Socher is the one who, he's now in the driver's seat? And this is a basic issue which applies to any mitzvah that could fall between the maskir and the socher, in which both of them have ample reason to be chayav. And therefore he says that when the Gemara asks about maskir and socher and bedika, it's identical to the question about maskir and socher and mezuzah. Because in both cases, we have to know, meeting the mitzvah, ami ramya, when there's a mitzvah that could be imposed upon both the maskir and the socher, who's in charge? You know, if you're learning Hanukkah, you could say the following. You know, you have a let's take Ner Shabbos, correct? We spoke about Ner Shabbos. Who's obligated Ner Shabbos? He or she? You know, they both should be chayv in Ner Shabbos. You have to make some decision. And what happened if you had a maskir? Okay, in the case of Ner Shabbos, no question the socher be chayv in Ner Shabbos because of Sholem Bayis. But what I'm just saying is, you can universalize this Gemara and the issue in the Gemara. The Gemara is vacillating about a mitzvah that could be incumbent upon either the maskir or the socher equally. They're equally responsible for this mitzvah. Who should actually implement the mitzvah? Who should be mekayim the mitzvah? And the answer is, I'm going to prove to you from mezuzah that the socher is obligated in this mitzvah, because whenever there's a mitzvah that falls between the maskir and the socher is obligated in the mitzvah. So in other words, the Gemara now holds, and I'm going to read you another line from the Pnei Yeshua, Ata, with an I in Savra Gemara, Shemezuzah Chovas HaBayis. The obligation of the mezuzah is on the bayis. Umuteles ala maskir, even the maskir is chayav, no less than the socher, afal gavdieno darba bayis. In other words, the ownership of the bayis generates a chiyuv vis-a-vis the bayis. If the mitzvah is in the bayis, inherently the bayis has to be equipped with the mezuzah, then ownership is enough. On the other hand, the Gemara says, well, why not obligate the socher insofar as he's living in the house? He also has rights to the house. So they both really have a reason to generate the chiyuv mezuzah. So what should we do? Should we transfer the chiyuv from the maskir to the socher? Do we say no? The socher should do. No, the maskir should do. The socher should do. The maskir should. You yell and scream, you know, goats and chickens and back and forth, until finally you come to the conclusion based on the rice that the socher has to put up the mezuzah. If the socher has to put up the mezuzah, then mitzvah deramya bayis, whenever there's a chiyuv mitzvah on a bayis, then it's the socher who picks up the chiyuv, even though there was ample reason to generate a chiyuv on the maskir. So the Gemara's analogy now, according to the Pnei Yeshua, is a beautiful analogy. that just like in the case of mezuzah, where there are two people vying for the bias, meaning for the chiyuv mitzvah on the bias, the final conclusion is, and I'll prove to you from the bryas, is that the socher picks up the mitzvah, he's obligated, so too in the chiyuv bias, that the bias should become chometz free, we're going to impose the chiyuv on whom? On the socher. Again, in the first explanation, the Gemara thinks that the maskir was chayuv, and then he wanted to transfer the chiyuv over to the socher, and Echinami, the price says he can do so. So we have transferability proven, and that's going to be a beautiful coin to the reintosis. The other option is to say that Echinami, there are two people who are chayiv and bedika for two different reasons, the maskir for his reason, and the socher for his reason. And now the question is, Lamaisa, who has to implement that chiyuv? Torech zu, I'll be mutal. And the answer is, I'll prove from you, mezuzah, when we have a bias, and both the maskir and the socher are equally culpable or responsible for the mezuzah, and the bottom line is, who has to implement the mezuzah? It's the socher. That's the pnei yoshuv. Wow. Heavy, heavy stuff, Rabosai. Two lines in the Gemara, but really heavy. How are we doing on the clock? Not too great. Okay. So let's just make a summary of where we're up to. The Gemara is about to reject the analogy to mezuzah, and the Gemara is going to finally establish that the maskir is not chayav in mezuzah. He never lived in the house. He never intended to live in the house. He's in a rental. What do they call it today? People who own houses and they're in the rental business, you know?
Rental business.
Okay, we'll call it the rental business. There should be another word for it. But anyway.
Real estate.
Right?
He's a real estate mogul.
So I don't know if you know anybody who fits this description, that they buy a place and they rent it out. Sometimes it covers the mortgage and sometimes it brings in even extra money, so they support themselves with the extra money. This is common practice in our time, and it was common practice back in the Gemara's time. So the Gemara wants to know, if you have a maskir, is he chayav in mezuzah? The Gemara says, name. The Torah never imposed the chayav of mezuzah based on ownership. It's based on who's living in the mezuzah. Here's where Rashi is going to introduce the, what I called yesterday, the Lubavitcher concept of shmirah, that the mezuzah protects you. And therefore, you living in the house, you need that protection. Biyoscha. And therefore, you have to put up the mezuzah. So that's going to be our discussion for tomorrow. So all I can say at this point is mazel tov that we have a new granddaughter as of less than 24 hours ago. And thanks everyone for coming. Have a great day. Good. Thank you so much.